As of yesterday, Bloomberg reported that $17 trillion have now gone negative. What that means is that those bonds' yield has fallen below zero. And it has never happened in the history of the world. Now, what does that mean for us? You know, if I'm buying a single family home in Tampa, what does that mean for me? Well, it means everything.
This episode brought to you by Suites at Madison. Meeting and conference rooms for rent by the hour, week, month, or year. Suites at Madison, where business gets done. Check them out at www.downtowntampaoffice.com. Now, on to the show.
You are listening to the Invest Florida Real Estate Show, covering topics in lending, buy and sell strategies, property management, hot markets, and tips and tools to guide you along the way on your path to real estate success. You want Florida investment real estate talk? You have come to the right place. And now, our hosts, Eric Odom and Stephen Silverman.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Invest Florida Real Estate Show. This is your co-host, Eric Odom, along with Stephen Silverman. Stephen, crazy week.
Eric, crazy week and crazy times, because there's just so many things going on now. I mean, you know, we're real estate brokers, humble real estate brokers, and we try to give our clients advice and lead them in the right direction. And we also learn from our clients. And today in this market, we've got some clients who saying to us, we're at the top of the market, it's a bubble, we got to sell. And the other clients saying, now's the time to buy and help me find. And they're going for crazy cap rates. So where are we? It's just totally different opinions. And the speaker today is going to help us guide us through and understand what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's time for us to have that that discussion. I'm not sure we're going to provide a lot of clarity for you, but I think it's important to have the talk. You know, I'm not even going to get into the political side of things because, you know, I think a lot of us are just suffering from burnout of just constant craziness. But, you know, but past all the political stuff that's going on, there are some really insane things happening on the world economy. And we know how it affected us last time when things went sideways in the world. We saw in 1998, we saw in 2008. Now we're, you know, very long in the tooth in this expansion period. And so I think it's important for us to at least to talk about what's going on. And of course, if we had clarity, we'd provide it for you. But I think more than anything, we'll just talk about some points that I think maybe you need to be paying attention to and just have your head on a swivel in terms of your individual market and what you're going to do going forward. But don't ignore these things that are happening. I mean, I think you've got to think clearly about how this is going to fit into your investment strategy going forward. What's happening overseas is going to have an impact. What's happening here is going to have an impact in terms of the inverse yield curve and some other things that have started to occur over the last few days. So, Stephen, we actually had something very good happen. You know, we had somebody left a good review. And we love reviews, right?
They left a good review. Well, that's certainly encouraging.
Yeah, my preference is to have the reviews where people criticize your manner of speaking and your English capacity.
Yeah, we got one review like that who said, why don't you get a partner who can
speaks
talk English?
Yeah, we need someone to speak English.
I have some comments about that, but
I think he had something
that has to be offline.
He had something against Africans. That's the issue. Yeah, no Africans on the show. But I think he was joking, Stephen. But this guy actually is pretty serious. So it does help us when you guys leave comments because our guests that we work hard for you to try to bring on the show, they want to read and see what people are saying. Is it worth their time to come on to the show and talk with us? And so it does help. If you've not had a chance to do that, would appreciate it if you go on to the iTunes store or to go on to Google Play or Stitcher or any of the other distributors, syndicators of podcasts and leave us a review. It helps us a great deal. But I do want to read one from Green Man. Gave us a recent review here. It says, thank you for bringing on informative guests with experience and practical knowledge. It's exciting to listen to and fun to play Monopoly in my mind with you guys rolling the dice. Keep up the great work. Green Man, we really appreciate you taking the time to leave that review for us. It is meaningful, and anybody who is so inclined to do so would appreciate you to do also. Stephen, anything else before we get rolling in with our guests? We're talking economics today.
We got a lot to talk about, so let's rock and roll.
Let's roll on.
Today we have with us Neil Bawa. Neil is affectionately known as the mad scientist of multifamily. He is a technologist and entrepreneur. Neil is CEO and founder of Grow Capitus, a commercial real estate investment property. He acquires commercial properties all over the U.S. His current portfolio is over 2,000 units, over $180 million worth, projected to increase to 3,000 units in the next 12 months. He is active in student housing, and he is in 9 different states. Neil also serves as CEO of Multifamily University, an apartment investing education company. He is a top-rated speaker at conferences and events throughout the country. Nearly 5,000 students attend his multifamily seminar series each year. Neil's management techniques and revenue optimization techniques for multifamily are considered unique in the industry. Neil, welcome to the Invest Florida Show.
Thank you, guys. I'm delighted to be back on the show.
Yeah, Neil, we really enjoyed having you the first time. And if our listeners might remember, Neil, it's probably been a little over a year, maybe about 14, 15 months since Neil's been on the show. But he's a very numbers-based guy. And Neil actually had we'd been communicating back and forth about some of the things that Stephen and I had wanted to get on the show, some of the topics. And you know, Neil had sent over a PowerPoint presentation that he had done in regards to what's going on in the market from a, you know, from a global perspective in the United States and also abroad. And I thought it was very pertinent because of what, you know, what's happening right now with the fiscal and monetary system, what's going on, to have Neil talk about it because he's a knowledgeable guy and he's really studied this situation. So we're really looking forward to getting into this with you today, Neil.
It's nice to get out of the weeds, Neil. So we're looking just to get the overall big picture. Maybe we can just start off your analysis of what's going on a global basis.
Yeah, and I think that is very pertinent today. So in the past, before the 2008 crash, our economy was you know, connected to the global economy, but was still somewhat insulated in that something that happened in Asia or in the Eurozone took 12 to 18 months to actually trickle down to the U.S. economy. So there was this time to react, this time to change things, this time for that effect to be factored into whatever the heck we were doing. And here's what's happened, guys. That's changed. So now we have a true global economy. Because we are the reserve currency of the world and also the safe haven of the world, we now get affected very quickly by what's going on in the global economy. And I have to tell you, today is actually a great day to talk about this, because the stuff that is happening on a worldwide basis is so ridiculously bizarre that I can't imagine anything like this happening. So we have an economy, a powerhouse economy like Germany. Germany is a manufacturing powerhouse, you know, strongest economy in the Eurozone. Yesterday, for the first time in their history, they sold 30-year bonds at negative yields. That means that if you want to buy a German 30-year bond, you have to pay for the privilege of lending money to the German government for 30 years. This is very important for people that are in real estate in the U.S. to understand, because this is like an 800-pound gorilla that affects everything that is happening in Tampa, everything that is happening in San Francisco. And I'll explain why this stuff is so important, but I'll also explain why it's so ridiculous, right? So as of yesterday, Bloomberg reported that $17 trillion, that's not 17 million, that's not 17 billion, that's $17,000 billion of bonds worldwide have now gone negative. But what that means is that those bonds yield has fallen below zero. And it has never happened in the history of the world before. We were at $13 trillion back in the 2014 timeframes, and we sort of adjusted. But $17 trillion of negative yielding debt. Now, what does that mean for us? You know, if I'm buying a single family home in Tampa, what does that mean for me? Well, it means everything, because that $17 trillion is a market that is much larger than the U.S. commercial market, the U.S. real estate market. And imagine how crazy those fund managers are going right now. Because if 40 or 50% of their portfolio, their huge, massive portfolio somewhere in the Eurozone or in Japan, if it's negative, they're not making any money. They're making nothing. In fact, negative yield. They're losing money by buying bonds.
Let's go into the mindset of somebody that would buy a negative yielding bond, Neil. Is it because they believe deflation's coming, or what's the driver for investors to invest in a negative yielding bond?
Or political uncertainty, maybe?
I think all of those, right? So the first thing is, whenever there's political uncertainty, the playbook says buy bonds, right? Because bonds basically are like cash to those sorts of people.
Sure.
The second thing is that it is because people are brainwashed that portfolios have to be a combination of stocks and bonds. And these days, more and more portfolios are actually now have a third component in the pie, real estate. But still, that's new. That's just happened in the last few years. Most portfolios are stocks and bonds, regardless of whether it's a $1 billion portfolio or if it's a $1 trillion portfolio. And so people have been brainwashed into that. Second, many, many countries, if it's a public fund, let's say it's a pension fund, they are required by law to hold a certain percentage of their assets as bonds. So they don't want to hold them. They want to get away from bonds because they realize that negative bonds are a massive risk to their portfolio. They don't want to be losing money on 40 or 30% of their portfolio. So one of the interesting things that's happening worldwide right now that really plays into real estate and stocks is that more and more fund managers that have $1 trillion portfolios with a T are actually asking their governments to make changes so that they can have less bonds and more risk assets in their portfolio. Stocks are risk assets. Real estate are risk assets. There's also other kinds of risk assets. And more fund managers throughout the world are saying, you realize that there's $17 trillion of negative yielding debt. We've got to change something. Otherwise, we cannot hit our yields. We cannot pay pensions. We cannot pay Social Security. And so ridiculous, crazy things are happening worldwide. But they're not happening here yet, right? So we have a 10-year treasury that basically pays out 2%. And we might say that's a very small amount of money. Well, it's the best in the world amongst the developed economies. Mm-hmm. We're far much better than Germany at zero. Denmark is doing crazy things, and this happened last week, and it was a warning bell the size of Godzilla. A bank in Denmark a few weeks ago started selling 30-year mortgages at negative interest rates. You know what that means? I take out a $400,000 mortgage, and in 30 years, I pay no interest, and I don't even pay 100% of the principal back. I pay 96% of the principal back. The remaining 4% is paid by the lender. This is not a joke. This is an actual bank. You can Google the bank and you can go out and get a 30-year loan for free. Jeez. Right? Now that bank has costs. Everybody in that ecosystem that made that loan happen had costs. So the bank isn't just eating the $4,000. They're eating all of those costs. And this is stunning. The fact that mortgages are negative in Eurozone means that it's going to affect us. So maybe we can also talk about what all these crazy things that are happening, all this stuff, how does it affect us in the next 18 months? Because boy, it is going to affect us big time.
Let's talk about it.
So the first thing is this, that there is a search for yield. Those people that have $17 trillion of negative yielding debt in their portfolios, whether they're the Japanese, whether they're the Eurozone people, whether they're Americans, because you know we've been buying their bonds for a while too. It's not just them buying our bonds, we buy theirs too. Well, those portfolio managers are freaking out because they're saying, how is it that no part of the world is in a major recession right now? The U.S. economy is doing really well. The German economy is doing really well. But bonds are negative. We've got to change the way we think. We've got to basically put more money into risk assets. So more and more, bills are appearing in legislatures and parliaments of these countries saying we've got to rebalance our portfolios and start doing less bonds, right? Mm. And Trump is actually fueling the fire. He said yesterday, I admire Germany's negative yields because he says that the country is being paid to borrow. So this is the absolute wrong attitude. I'm sure the Federal Reserve right now is going, please, could Trump just shut up? He doesn't know anything about monetary policy. He doesn't know actually anything about this. The worst thing that you could do is basically have a country that has negative yields because it really affects the growth of that country. It's a good thing that we are at positive yields, but our politicians want to go Germany's route. Why? Because they can lend, they can basically borrow more money. Mm-hmm. Our treasury is financing our ridiculous trillion-dollar deficits with these kinds of treasury bonds. And if the treasury bond of the U.S., the 10-year bond goes from, let's say, 2% where it is right now or a little under to zero, guess how much more money we could borrow? And that's the only thing the politicians are thinking, which is crazy because in the long run, these things all damage economies. And the Eurozone's economy has been at zero for 7 or 8 years. And we're seeing the kind of crazy damage that's happening. Mortgages that are below 0%, not just bonds, but mortgages below 0%. So the impact on us is multifold. Number one, money is going to flow from the Eurozone and from Japan into the U.S. economy. It's going to flow into our risk assets, into our stocks, into our real estate, because they're looking for yield. They're desperate for yield because they need to hit a certain amount of yield to keep paying out their pensions or whatever it is that they're doing. And so you're going to start seeing a inflow of money coming in from everywhere in the world to us because we are the only developed economy that is actually issuing money out. Mm-hmm. So this might extend our already fairly outrageous real estate and stock bubble, make it significantly bigger, and it's going to be really hard to bust the bubble because everybody else is making way less money than we are. Everybody else is issuing bonds at zero. How do you break up that bubble? The moment there's a dip, a whole amount of money basically comes in saying, hey, it's a buying opportunity. Let's go buy U.S. stocks. Let's go buy U.S. Real estate. That's what I'm seeing already happening, and it's accelerating.
Now, you guys out in California, we consider secondary or tertiary market in Tampa here, but we've certainly heard the stories of Miami, the international flows that it's drying up in one area, but it's picking up from other countries. What are you guys seeing out there? You're on the West Coast. What are you seeing in terms of the investors that are foreign investors that are coming into your market?
It's changing. So what we are seeing is that the immigration related money is drying up. So Miami obviously has immigration related money that comes in from Brazil and it comes in from Cuba and it comes in from a whole bunch of countries. It's that part of it is true. It's drying up. But it's same thing for California. California gets a lot of money from Mexico and it gets a lot of money from China and India. And that seems to be slowing down because of our current immigration policies being more restrictive and, the limit being raised for the EB-5 investors. Now they have to put in millions instead of 500,000 to get a visa. All those things are affecting that market negatively. And Miami and California are actually the ones affected the most. But on the other hand, institutional money coming in from the people with trillion-dollar budgets appears to be accelerating simply because they have no other place to put their money in, and the U.S. seems like a safe haven. I mean, I have to say this, and what I'm saying, what I'm about to say sounds absurd, but I think about what I'm saying. We are the best-looking pig in the pigsty. There's no other economy in the world that has our level of unemployment, our level of growth, or track record of growth over the last 5 years. That's a developed economy in the world. Where else can the money go but to come to the U.S.? And I know that we've got our own massive challenges, but the problem is when other people look at their challenges, ours appear trivial. And technically, the reserve currency of the world can actually push up their debt a lot further than everybody else. We are at 104% of GDP in debt, which is, I think, a disgusting number. But why would the Eurozone care about that when they've got countries at 200% of debt and they are not the reserve currency of the world? Japan's over 250. China's over 250 in GDP. So while we worry about our debt, The question is, should we be worrying about it at this point? You got to be pragmatic about it. It seems like this is a race to the bottom, and everybody else seems to be tanking their currency and their debt much worse than we are.
So let me ask you a question. In your conversation, you mentioned the word with a big B in front, bubble. And so can you speak to, do you feel like we're in a bubble now in the U.S., even though it can be extended?
I think so. So by traditional valuations, multifamily appears to be in a bubble, and some parts of single family market in the U.S. are in a bubble. So I look at Denver, right? I look at prices in Denver in 2006 and today we're up 40 or 50%. It's some crazy number. I look at, you know, parts of Miami. I look at New York, San Francisco Bay Area for sure. So there's definitely a significant number of markets that are in a single family bubble. Multifamily appears to be in a bubble in many markets around the U.S. The problem is this. The words that were most important in what I just said is by traditional standards, by traditional measurements. And I am of the opinion that traditional measurements of risk are breaking down. And that is what, you know, if you listen to Bloomberg, everyone's basically saying that it seems that the past and the future might actually be different for this time. And these are not, you know, some fringe guys like Peter Schiff talking about it. These are mainstream commentators that previously have always said, no, it's not any different. Everything revert, you know, there's a reversion to norm. And at this point, it's possible that there may not be reversion to mean. It's possible that there may be a new mean here. And that new mean is driven by the fact that world growth is slowing. And a yield of real estate, even at these crazy prices, is so much better than the alternatives that it may be difficult for us to prick our bubble. Will it burst? Sure, everything bursts at some point. But I think that it's very difficult to burst this bubble. With so much pressure, so much money sitting on the sidelines, and so much money at negative yield, it's very difficult for us to burst the bubble. Maybe it can be slowly deflated. That's, you know, that's very hard to do. But I do think that there is a bubble by traditional valuations.
So in terms of where we are now, in the, you mentioned a recession. Last time we had a recession, really it was something in banking that then fell upon real estate, and it seemed to happen economy by economy and then became global. And if we're now a global economy, what's the possibility of recession, and how do you think it would happen?
I think that the Eurozone drags the U.S. into a recession. There's no reason for the U.S. to go into a recession at this point of time. I think our economy is doing really well, remarkably well, right? We're in this odd Goldilocks zone that nobody could have predicted 3 or 4 years ago. But the problem is, I mean, you look at what is happening with Brexit in England. You know, as we talked about a little bit earlier, you know, a lot of high end London real estate, you know, is based on the Wall Street, the massive Wall Street setup that they've got there. And unfortunately, those jobs have to go away from England. They have to go to other partners in the Eurozone. And when that happens, it crashes London's real estate, which is very expensive. We're talking about trillions of dollars that lose value. Now, it's not as big as the global financial crash of 2008. It's definitely a smaller market. And it's less of a contagion because these are, at least we know where the money is and which banks are going to be insolvent in London as a result of it. But I do think that it could drag us into a recession. And when I say recession, I don't mean global financial crash. I mean regular vanilla 9-month typical recession. It could drag us in there. It may not be England. It might be Italy. Italy has more bad bonds today and bad debt today than we did in 2008 as a percentage of our economy. So they're in a bad position. Greece is once again in a bad position. So is Japan. So we've got a lot of countries out there that are in desperate trouble compared to us. And one of them could easily drag the world economy into a recession, which drags us into a recession. So I give it a higher than 50% chance of recession in the next 12 months.
Yeah, and folks in Florida, we're driven, our foreign buyers, and it's a significant number. It was the majority of the value of Florida real estate in the first part of this decade, foreign buyers, and they're the ones who really pulled us out of the recession, the pullback that we were having. And it's important to note that Britain, Germany, Canada, and Brazil over the last decade have been the biggest consumers, foreign consumers of Florida real estate. And if you have a situation where you hiccup in the UK, we're definitely going to feel it here because they are a significant piece of the demand of the Florida real estate market. So the Florida listeners, that's something to definitely I've been banging the drum on this ever since Brexit happened. You got to pay attention to the UK and Florida and some other states because they are significant buyers of real estate here. And you take that piece of the equation out and your demand dries up, it can't help but affect prices. So it's something to keep in mind.
So Neil, what happens if we do have a recession? Because if traditional markers have been changing, so have the traditional tools. Because with our interest rates so low, how do we combat a recession like we have done in the past?
Well, I think that the tools are the same. Their effectiveness is going to be reduced. So it is very clear that the U.S. Federal Reserve has a playbook, and they're going to double down on that playbook, right? Their strategy is known as, you know, pretend and extend, or extend and pretend, whichever one you call it. And there's very clear indication that they are doubling down on that strategy. So we have an economy that's growing 200,000 jobs, you know, a month at, you know, less than 4% unemployment.
Right.
And we have just cut interest rates. I think that if you told Volcker in the 80s, that we just did that, you know, he would not believe you. No Federal Reserve official would have believed you even 10 years ago that we would be cutting interest rates at less than 4% unemployment and a healthy economy. This is a sign of two things. Number one, cutting interest rates have long-term consequences and they're going to catch up with us. Right, we've done this for 8 years, and now we're seeing the consequence of cutting interest rates worldwide. And those consequences mean slowing growth for everyone in the world, including us. The second piece of it, though, is they are going to double down. One thing that has been proven, which is interesting, is that nothing bad happens when you cut interest rates below zero. We didn't cut them below zero in the global financial crash, but other countries did. Nothing really happened to their economies at all. So I think that it is possible that if we go into another worldwide recession, maybe not as bad as 2008. I think 2008 was a crazy outlier. It's very difficult to have another recession as bad as that one. And so I think what will happen is that other countries will cut them to below zero, and we're going to cut them back to where we were. Hopefully we don't need to go negative, but if they need to, they will go negative. And also, I think what we'll start doing is quantitative easing, which again is good for real estate. Quantitative easing, a lot of people call it money printing. It's not really money printing. It's liquidity. It basically is flooding the banks with liquidity and almost forcing them through monetary tools to lend, almost pushing them to lend. It's like the bank has to lend money out, which means that lending standards get looser. So I think that's what we'll see in the next 12 months. We'll see the return of quantitative easing, or QE. We'll see lower interest rates. I bet you they're going to cut interest rates again in September or December or both. And when that happens, it actually, in a way, supports the real estate bubble, right? Lower interest rates and higher liquidity. How can that not be supportive of real estate? You know, if you go into a recession, of course, real estate is going to suffer. Prices will go down. Rents will go down. But the beauty of it is, the same damn thing that happened in 2010, 11, 12, 13 when we came out of a recession, it can be expected when we come out of this one. We have a monetary policy system which basically loves blowing asset bubbles. So when we come out of this recession, I expect we're going to blow an even bigger bubble.
Yeah, I think in the short term, most of what you've talked about, real estate investors are listening to this podcast and say, hey, that's great, man. Real estate prices are going to continue to increase, and I'll continue to speculate. And that's it's not all unicorns and sunshine roses. And if you look more to the midterm and the long term, and I think that's the point that you're trying to make, correct?
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely. I feel that we are at the point where the one thing I would say to people is follow what the Federal Reserve of the U.S. does, because it almost seems like what the politicians do doesn't matter. So too many people are worried about our debt. I'm not. And people might say, Neil, we're spending $1 trillion a year that we don't have. How can you not be worried about it? And the answer is that we're probably going to be the last domino to fall. And there's people ahead of us that are doing things much worse than us. And I'm more worried about that. And when they do those things, our Fed is going to basically use tools, and those tools are going to help real estate. None of that means that real estate will do well in the upcoming recession. It didn't do well in the last one. It's not going to do well in this one. But I would still hold through that recession. The only thing that I would change is I would change my approach during the recession or when I see GDP going negative. I'm going to change my approach from trying to make money for my investors to just capital preservation. You know, I'm not going to raise rents aggressively. I'm not going to rehab units aggressively. I'm not going to, you know, try to basically do those kinds of things. I'm just going to try and hold my way through the recession, knowing that at the end of the recession, I'll be rewarded with crazy, ridiculously low interest rates for another 3 or 4 years. And I could just make money from that. I mean, I almost feel sick when I say stuff like this, because what we're really doing is stealing trillions of dollars from savers and handing it to people that are in risk markets assets, like me. Mm-hmm. Basically, money is being transferred from anyone that's on a fixed income, Social Security or pensions, and being handed off to anybody that is in stocks and real estate. And I don't think that changes because, you've already seen what's happened in the last 2 or 3 months. Our Federal Reserve is cutting interest rates at 3% unemployment.
It's so interesting to me what you were saying, because reading the paper every day, it always felt to me like it was an aberration. Why are they cutting it? I don't know, but it can't last. And I've always been thinking they have to raise it back up again soon. So it's an opportunity to try and buy or do things. But the prospect of it going even lower is a whole different scenario that just honestly didn't cross my mind.
Well, I want to talk about that, right? So a lot of people say, well, they're just doing it, you know, they don't have to do it, they have a choice. I don't really see it as a choice. Imagine this. You've got the rest of the world cutting interest rates. So everybody's talking about cutting interest rates. All the bonds are going negative. And here we have a Federal Reserve that has an economy strong enough so that they could hold or raise interest rates. People think they have a choice. Well, they don't have a choice. Because our economies are so connected, imagine what would happen if we raised interest rates today. Okay, so we raise rates. Guess what happens? We're now offering 3% on treasuries, on 10-year treasuries. Massive amounts of money floods into the U.S. That money makes our dollar so strong that within 3 months, our exports take a catastrophic hit and we go into a recession. It's a delicate balancing act. You cannot allow your currency to get so strong that our exports get damaged. And so the Fed, I don't think they have a choice right now to cut interest rates. I think that they have no choice at all. They have to follow everybody else down, because if they don't and a big gap opens up, then our exports get crushed.
So what's the bottom line here, Neil? I mean, what are you telling your team members to do in terms of an outlook for investing and buying additional and holding additional real estate assets? How are you telling people about, you know, how to deal with this pending crisis?
So, I mean, here's a list. Number one, expect a recession in the next 12 months. If you're doing rehab projects, finish them by then. Finish them quicker. The moment you start seeing a single quarter of negative GDP growth, basically become very conservative with your assets. Whatever you're buying, now is a good time to be buying, you know, B assets rather than C assets. C assets might, you know, class C assets, kind of, you know, the workforce assets might be overperforming at this point, but they traditionally don't overperform during a recession. Keep in mind that the average tenant in a Class C has less than $400 in the bank. If their hours get cut or they lose their job, they're going to stop paying rent. And so you're going to see some of those challenges. So now's a time to be a little careful, to be buying a better class of assets, even if it means less cash flow. But it's also a time to recognize that that what is going to happen over the next 12 months is going to create another buying opportunity for real estate. And I think for those of you that are in stocks, it's going to create another buying opportunity in stocks, because you're going to see a dip in real estate, you're going to see a dip in stocks. And hopefully, my point is, once that dip ends, the pickup will be even larger than it has been in the past. So time to be careful, because I think that the Goldilocks economy that we have cannot last. And I do think that there's at least a 50% chance of a recession within the next 12 to 18 months.
So really, like, start building cash reserves and more conservative kind of assets, the cash reserves, so you can take advantage of when the dip comes.
The cash reserves are really key. So we are looking at all of our projects, and we're beginning to tell our investors, and this is just a new thing for us, because obviously things are moving fast in the world economy. We're telling investors something like this. My job is to give you cash flow when the economy is like it is today, the Goldilocks economy. My job changes when I get close to a recession. And so if I sense maybe one quarter of negative GDP growth, I'm going to stop distributing your cash and I'm going to start building a war chest. It's still your money, but I'm holding it. If growth turns positive again, great, I'll send you that money. If growth stays negative, I'm going to hold on to that cash, and any new cash that comes in, I'm going to keep adding to that war chest, because God only knows how long that recession will last, and that cash will help me get over this hump onto the other side, where the Federal Reserve would have made life much simpler for me with quantitative easing, high liquidity, and low interest rates. So I do get benefits on the other end, but we've got to get through the recession if it happens.
Well, it's certainly a whole different scenario from the last recession. I mean, I woke up from the last recession and wondered how that whole thing happened, but it was catastrophic. Having some kind of a game plan is really an interesting scenario for all of us. It's just always so hard to see the wood from the trees. So I appreciate your perspective on that.
Well, sounds good. I once again, as I said, this is not necessarily a good thing for the world economy or the U.S. economy in the long term. But in the short term, it seems that the Federal Reserve and all the entire banking system are the friends of real estate and the friends of stocks. But being part of a bubble is always unnerving. And so I'm slightly excited and also slightly nervous about what the next 12 to 18 months holds.
I'd love to ask you a tangential question, because the biggest lender in the world now is China. How do they get how do they get affected by this? And they've been manipulating currency also, I guess, to try and counter everything.
Yeah, let's talk about the craziness of China, because you have these tariffs going on, and so they devalue their currency.
Right.
And then, of course, they're the largest holder of U.S. debt, so they get paid back in appreciated currency, essentially. It's a big Mickey Mouse game.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm trying to get a handle on, and I really understand China. It's beyond my pay grade, but I'd love to see if you have any thoughts on that.
Well, I think that the Chinese cannot, you know, call their debt, obviously they are huge holders of ours, cannot call their debt to us easily, because they know what that will do. I mean, basically, they are part of the world economy, and it would create a catastrophic crash. I'm more worried about the trade war getting worse. I mean, I've seen these things. A trade war is kind of like a war, right? A regular war, right? And in a regular war, people don't use common sense. I mean, once you get beyond a certain level, everybody's just trying to kill each other. And I see that there's a that's beginning to happen now in this, you know, Trump versus China sort of debacle. And so there's, in my mind, I see it getting worse, a lot worse, before it gets any better. Now, back to your question on what does China mean as an X factor? Well, I have to say, no one knows. There's more and more articles about what happens if we get into a situation like 2008 this time, where more of the assets are held by China, given that in the past, all the banks were talking together, but China has shadow banking that basically is not part of the world system. They're not transparent. And their reaction is something that is very difficult to understand. Remember that in 2008, 2009, there was lots of horse trading. Banks got together, wrote off each other's debt, did all kinds of stuff. And those banks have been collaborating for decades before that, and they've been collaborating for the last 10 years. But the Chinese banks are not in there. We don't know how they're going to react if something bad happens. So the only answer I can give you is, you're right, it's a massive X factor, and nobody knows what they're going to, you know, react like if something does happen in terms of a recession. I mean, remember, a vanilla recession doesn't affect anything. You know, we're talking about potentially something that's more drastic than that.
And I think everybody that was actually engaged in their profession in the last recession is constantly looking for the boogeyman around every corner. Me personally, when I watched The Big Short, living a parallel universe of what went on there, there were so many signs and keys that we actually talked about, and we severely underestimated the eventual outcome. And so, you know, you talk about China, you talk about Brexit, you talk about these other things, and we're all sort of looking for this next boogeyman. Of course, no recession, two recessions are alike. They're triggered by different things. They're different severities, et cetera, et cetera. But I don't think anybody who had lived through the last one will ever recover mentally and are perhaps a little bit overcautious in many instances. So it's great to have these conversations to at least hash it out, you know?
Yeah, and I think that the things that happened last time, nobody thought about them. Well, this time it could also be things that nobody knows about. There's, like we talked about, Brexit being a weird sort of thing. Obviously, you know, debt is much higher this time. You know, 10 years later, we've piled on trillions of dollars of debt. So we don't know how that would affect us if we had a recession. I do feel that there's a silver lining. I think the banking system is much more ready this time. I think the fact that the Fed has already cut interest rates show that they're much more responsive than they were in 2007, when they should have been cutting interest rates and they weren't. So the fact that they're doing it at this point in time means that it is likely to be a shallow recession, or we might narrowly avoid one. Having said that, the yield curve has inverted three times in the last 2 weeks. Well, you know, they say that if the yield curve inverts, that tells you that a recession is coming.
Yeah, predicts the next 18 months, yeah.
It's now happened, yeah, exactly, 18 months from now, or 12 to 18 months from now. Well, it's inverted three times in the last week. Today, ARMs are offering lower, higher interest rates than fixed rate loans. So you can get a 30-year loan a lower interest rate than an adjustable mortgage. Mm. That's a very bizarre situation, don't you think?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, logic, obviously, with the inverse yield curve tells us, you know, you go back and take a look at the history of when it happens. It definitely is not a good harbinger of what's happening in the near term. That people are concerned about what's going on in the near term. So your head spinning with so much of this data, and people say, well, no, it's different this time, and this is why it's different, and the inverse yield curve is not that big of a deal. And of course, every ounce of my mind say, I've seen this inverse yield curve before. I know where it leads. I don't know, this era of fake news. I don't really know.
But it is interesting just in perspective for real estate, because I remember meeting with one broker and he told me what a tough time he had in the late 80s or 90s. And when the recession came in 2008, he looked at that as an opportunity, although nobody expected it to be quite that opportunity. But you know, you learn by experience. The first one I really went through was 2008, and it was a shocker for me just to see what happened. And so now you realize that if things do improve after those recessions, that you have to be on the lookout for them and be ready. And as real estate investors, we should all position ourselves like that.
I do think that. One of the nice things is you've kind of seen this before once. And if the playbook remains the same, then I think that there's a high chance that real estate will come out of it the same way. So I think I'm more prepared to look at it both as something that I'm cautious about, but also something that I have some excitement about. And I think other people are feeling the same way. This, I don't think that what might happen this time in terms of a recession might be different from 2008, in the sense that it will end up with the banks taking the same sort of actions to bring the economy back. But I encourage you. I think that today, if you're a real estate investor, you should be reading Bloomberg. You should be reading what's happening in the financial world, because the stuff happening in the last week or two has been extraordinary, including that Danish bank doing 30-year mortgages at under cost, under 0%. So definitely, there's something weird happening, and it's happening very, very quickly.
Well, it's a progression, you know, Neil. As you get older, you mature, but it seems to me that aging is a terrible price to pay for maturity. But, you know, now
well, it's unavoidable. You might as well get maturity because you're going to get older anyway.
Neil, we really appreciate the time you spent with us today. Is there anything else you'd like to add before we let you go?
Yes, I do want to point out that one of the key demographic trends in the country is that because of all this stuff that we've talked about today, America's middle class basically is being lost. People, you know, a lot of the middle class are getting pushed down. They can't afford homes anymore. The home ownership rate has been falling since 2005. I fundamentally believe that being a landlord is one of the best things that you can do for yourself in the next 30 years. So none of the things that we talked about change that. I think you want to be a landlord. Obviously, you want to be cautious and all that stuff that we talked about today. But have a long-term plan to be a landlord, because if you look at the history of other European nations and Japan, actually, when these sorts of things happen and savers get punished, more and more people have no recourse but to be landlords. I do think that we'll see that the percentage of Americans that lives in a single-family home 20 years from now is much lower than it is today, which means that they have to live somewhere. So fundamentally, the concept of being a landlord, this is a great time to be a landlord, I think, for the next 10 to 20 years.
Okay. Good advice, Neil. Would remind people, if you haven't had a chance, Neil is a very numbers-oriented, analytical guy. I'd encourage you to listen to the last podcast talking about multifamily. Also, Neil, if folks want to get hooked up with some of your educational seminars and whatnot, or they've got a deal for you, how can they reach you?
The best way to reach me is through my website, which is multifamilyu.com. That's multifamily followed by the letter u.com. You'll see about 50 webinars from us, including one called How the Banking System Changed Real Estate Forever. So that's some of the content here was about that one. But you'll also see lots of single family and multifamily analytics webinars that point out the best and the worst cities in the U.S. to invest in, tools, techniques, processes, systems to make real estate investing work. And all of it is really offered for free. So check out multifamilyu.com, and you'll see multiple ways through that website to connect with me personally.
Yeah, Neil's got a great system. I mean, we talked about it on the previous podcast of trying to put together an algorithm of where he would predict in advance where the best real estate markets are going to be to invest in over the next X number of years. And so I think it's definitely worth listening to that and some of other of the courses that Neil talks about. He's not your typical guy, rah-rah guy in terms of multifamily. He's takes a very analytical approach and a very numbers-based approach, and he tries to teach you what's inside his brain and how he got to where he got. Stephen, anything before we let Neil go?
No, I enjoyed the session with the mad scientist. It was just very illuminating. So thank you, Neil, and we'll catch up with you again in the near future. Hopefully, we'll have a mild recession, or maybe we'll avoid.
No, we don't want it. We're not always rooting for a recession.
I'm just hoping we escape one. And given the actions taken by our Fed, I think that there's a good chance that we might escape. But who knows? Gotcha. They've learned, right?
Yeah, you hope. Anyway,
we hope. Okay. So let's end at hope. I'm a hopeful individual, and I hope that we escape it.
All right.
Thanks, Neil.
Thank you, Neil.
Thanks so much. Bye bye.
And that was Neil Bawa. He's talking high level economics. We've had him on the show before. Always appreciate Neil's insight. He's certainly an analytical guy and a numbers based guy, and so it's great to have him kind of come on and talk. I don't know, what were your thoughts, Stephen?
Well, listening to Neil, there's some crazy things happening in the world economy right now, and it's hard to see the woods from the trees, or is it the trees from the woods? That's how confused I'm getting, but it's really illuminating to get a view from 30,000 square feet. I think square feet shows you I'm a broker, always talking. But to get a view from 30,000 foot up and look at the economy and try and understand what's going on. And I think Neil did a great job.
It's confusing. I mean, I've been in financial services and real estate my entire professional life. You know, predicting markets, I mean, if I could do it, obviously I probably wouldn't be sitting here with you, Stephen. I'd be
and here you are,
and here I am. But I think that you know the data that we get in, you know, being somewhat gun shy from 2008, it's all very confusing. There's so many things that are happening that we've not really seen before, so you can't really react how.
There's another factor also, Eric. It's like emails. You know, the first email we all looked at, or the first, but we get such a volume of data now. It's hard to sort out and see what's going to have an impact.
Yeah, I mean, and again, you're seeing things that we've not seen before. My entire adult life, for example, Brexit, you talk about this undoing. For the time I was 6 years old, 5 years old, I remember the discussion with my uncle, my mother's British, and you know, we have a family in the UK. What is a currency going to mean? What is it going to be if they join a customs union? And we've been having this all came to the climax in of the last decade of the EU actually forming. Of course, the UK never joined the Eurozone, but they were part of the EU and able to come and go as they please. And now you're having a complete undoing of that. So my entire 50 plus years of existence, we've been moving towards one, and now we're completely breaking it apart. And you're seeing things happening that with the interest rates and the other thing that are just, it's concerning because we've not seen it. We don't know how to react to it. And so I'm not sure we did it justice today in trying to make this less opaque for our listeners, but I think we need to talk about it.
Well, listen, if you want to learn a little bit more, the best place to go is to the www.investfloridashow.com. You can listen to Neil's prior podcast and many other podcasts we have. You can also download the app to listen on your mobile device.
Guys, as always, we appreciate the time that you invest with us each and every episode. And until next time, hasta la vista.
You've just listened to the Invest Florida podcast with Eric Odom and Stephen Silverman. Join us every week for actionable real estate investment ideas, and of course, visit our website at www.investfloridashow.com for more shows and tips on how to earn a cash flow in the real estate market in Florida. While hosts and producers of the Invest Florida show have no reason to doubt the validity of comments of our guests, we do not warranty their accuracy. Please check with your legal, financial, and tax advisors before entering into any investment. Returns will vary from person to person and deal to deal based on unique circumstances. All information expressed in this show is for educational purposes only. Opinions of the guests are not necessarily shared by the hosts and producers of the Invest Florida show.